Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. Tanur Banan, we have a Braita. Rotzeh, Veik Torah Nevi'im V'Ktuvim Ke'achad. The person who wants to put together a full Tanakh, Midabek V'Oseh B'Rosho K'dei L'Gol Amud, U'B'Sofo K'dei L'Gol Hekif. So the way that you do this to make it work is that you're going to have, and the Amud in the beginning, we'll come back to this and discuss the Girsa here, because there might be some problems with the Girsa. But in the beginning, you put enough to roll around the Amud itself. So you have to put enough blank space to start out so that you roll it once around the Amud. At the other end, you have to leave enough blank space so that blank space can encompass the entire rolled Torah. So that way you have the ability when you're rolling it in the beginning and from the side that you're going to start rolling, it'll wrap around the Amud. And then after that, you'll have the beginning of the Torah. At the end, you want a complete blank page to be able to wrap around the Torah enough to do that, so it provides a protection. So in essence, you have an inner a layer that's blank, and then on the outside, you're going to have an outer layer that is blank, protecting the Sefer Torah. So that's the way they did it. Obviously, which side you roll from will make a big difference in this issue. If you start rolling from the beginning, then in the beginning you need the smaller amount of blank space, and at the end you need the bigger space. If vice versa, if you're starting to roll from the end towards the beginning, then at the end you need a smaller amount, and in the beginning you'll need that larger blank. That's the question that we're going to discuss in a minute with regards to the girsa. Umisayim milamata umatchil milamalo. You end at the bottom and begin at the top. Rashi explains over here that when you come to a bottom of a page, and normally you leave a certain amount of blank spaces before you start the next sefer, if it turns out that wherever you ended is at the bottom of a page, then you begin the next one at the top of the next page, even though you don't have the requisite blank spaces. In a parsha p'tucha u'stuma, in other instances, you would carry over the blank spaces to the top of the next page. Over here, where a sefer ends at the bottom of a page, then you just start the next sefer at the top of the page. You don't have to leave the requisite blank spaces between a svarim. Now, that might not be totally true, because Rashi explains it that way, but you can see in the Balei HaTosafot, v'nira l'rid ben chumash to chumash shel Torah, tzarich laniach, v'anevim dafka kamar, de'ein tzarich. That this whole din only applies to Nevi'im, not to the Torah itself. In the Torah itself, you always have to leave those blank spaces between the different Svarim. These are full rows. These are four rows that we discussed yesterday. There was also machloket in the Girsa yesterday as to whether Nevi'im have four rows or three rows. But you have to leave those blank rows in between them by the Chumash no matter what. That is not negotiable. On the other hand, with the Nevi'im, if you end the Sefer at the bottom of a page, you can start the next Sefer at the top of the page. So he says, Avim Chumash, Chumash Torah, lo midet avya parshab tucha, shimaya misayim milamata, yitzarich laniach shita achat. Just like by a parshab tucha, if you finish at the bottom, you gotta leave a blank space at the top. The same is true by Chumash. And then he brings the Ritzba. Mifaresh umisameim lamato machil lamalo uleolam meiniach dalet shitim. Says you always leave four rows. V'davka ben navi lenavi. V'em ben chumash lechumash lo yisameim lamato umatchil lamalo afilu banachat dalet shitim. He says this has to do with the navi, because only a navi can you finish and start on the top of a new page. But he brings from the Yerushalmi that all sifrei Torah the chumashim have to end in the middle of a page. Can't end them at the end of a page. So every chumash, whether it's between Breishit and Shmot, Shmot and Vayikra, Yikra and Midbar, they have to end in the middle of a page and start in the middle of a page with four blank rows in between them. They do not start at the top of a page. And then Tosfot explains the reason. Shouldn't end at the end of a page, even if you're going to leave blank spaces. Mishum, because what we're afraid of is going to divide it up. By a chumash, by a Torah, we don't want you subdividing it into chumashim. If we provide you a chumash that ends on the bottom line, it's the next chumash begins on the top, person might think, okay, I'll cut it over here and I'll split it over here. The fact that we don't allow that means that you cannot cut it anymore. Because if you cut it, it's going to be in the middle of a shita, in the middle of a row, and then it won't work anymore. So that's why you have to do it. Between the vi'im, where we do allow you to cut it down, there we allow you to end at the bottom and start at the top with the gapping of the four lines. So he explains the reason why there might be a difference between the rules of Chumash and the rules of Navi are because of what we allow to happen afterwards. So the Ritzba has a little twist on that. The Posavit already said that he thinks all the Chumashim need the four lines no matter where it's found. And the Ritzba says, we're mechavein to have it exactly in the middle or somewhere in the middle so that there's no question that the four lines are left and that you can't cut the chumashim into pieces. Whereas the Navi, you can cut into pieces. And that's what the Braita says over here. In balach toch, chotech. If he wants to cut it, he cuts it. My says, my kamar. What are you talking about? Because you just said before that if he wants to put together Torah Nevi'im Ktuvim Ke'achad, this is how you do it. And then if he wants to cut it, he's cutting it. Why is he cutting it? My kamar. Achi kamar. Shim balach toch, chotech. The reason that you do milamata umatchil milamala is shim balach toch, chotech. I mean, that's not a separate statement within the Braita, rather an explanation for the previous statement in the Braita. Why is it that you finish at the bottom and start at the top? She'im balach toch. If you want to come and cut it, you can cut it. Then you're able to cut it. And that'd be, again, very supportive of what the Ritzva was saying, why we wouldn't do that by a Sefer Torah, because we don't want you cutting it along the lines of the Chumashim. Tosfot over here asked, didn't we already explain in the Mishnah that the one thing that partners are not allowed to split is a sefer. All of a sudden over here, the Braita says, if you want to cut it, go ahead and cut it. Before we said we don't cut it because it's a bizayon to cut the sefer on behalf of the partners. So Tosfot over here differentiates and he says it's exactly that's the reason. If you're splitting the sefer because it's partners, that's a bizayon to the sefer. If you're splitting the sefer because you want separate sfarim, that's not a bizayon the sefer. That's something where you're trying to get unique sfarim or unique pieces to the sefer. That's not a bizayon the sefer. If the whole reason is a monetary question that I'm breaking it, then that's a bizayon sefer. Very minhi. Tchilat sefer visofo kedei lagul. It says that at the beginning of the sefer, at the end of the sefer, you have enough to wrap around kedei lagul. Kedei lagul mai. Gemara says, what does that mean? Kedei lagul. I kedei lagul amud. If it's like what I explained, that it's around the amud, kasha hekef. Then our braita said one side has hekef, one side has amud. One of the sides just wraps around the amud itself, the roller. The other one was to wrap around the entirety of the sefer. Over here, you're only requiring enough for the poles on both sides. I kedei lagul hekef. If you say kedei lagul means around the entire sefer, then kasha amud. Our braita has a mix and a match. This braita gives you something that says both sides have the same thing. So if that's the case, how do I reconcile between the braita we're reading now and the braita before? So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzhak, let's study him tani. Kedei lagul is an ambiguous term. It means whatever you need to wrap. So on one side, that means to wrap around the amud. And the other side, that means to wrap around the entire sefer. So it's not consistent. It's not saying kedei lagul means on both sides the same thing. But rather, kedei lagul is used as an ambiguous term because exactly that problem. It's not exactly the same. It just means whatever you need to wrap, you wrap it. That's what you put on either side. So Rav Ashi Amar, ki hatani ahi b'sefer Torah. That braita, speaking about a sefer Torah, where you have two rollers. So where you have two rollers, then both of them just have to be around the amud itself, not around the sefer, because you're going to wrap towards the middle. Since you're going to wrap towards the middle, you don't need that outer wrapping, because it's not going to be relevant, the outer wrapping, if you're rolling towards the middle. All that matters then is the internal wrapping going around the amud itself. Ki hatani, kol ha'sfarim nigdalim mitchilatan lisofan. That all Sfarim are rolled from their beginning to their end. The Sefer Torah, Niklala Emtziato. On the other hand, the Sefer Torah is wrapped to the middle. Middle here does not mean literally the middle. It just means that you have two rollers, and therefore you end up being somewhere besides the ends of the Sefer Torah. Basulo Amud Elech Velech. And that's exactly what's being described here. By Sefer Torah, you have rollers, you have Amudim on both sides, as opposed to other Sfarim where they're on a single Amud. And based on the fact that they're on a single amud, you wrap them. Here we have the girsu that's in our Gemara is mitchilatan lisofan, from their beginning until their end. So the reason for that is, at least if you believe that this is the right girsu, right, then the reason for that would be by a Sefer Torah, there's a tircha de tzibur, if you roll it to the ends, or even to the middle, to get to the place where you need to read will be difficult. In the Nevi'im or the Ktuvim, which are a single Sefer, it's not going to be so difficult to roll to the place each time, because it's only a Sefer. It's only one Sefer. It's not a complete Torah. And therefore, even if you wrap it all the way from beginning to end, you can open it up quickly and get to where you need to get to. Rashi over here in the previous Amud says at the bottom by the Sefer Torah, She'enu se'shne Amudim le'gololo le'emtzo'o, k'mo she'anu asim le'sefer Torah. The Braita says they don't have two Amudim in the Sefer Torah, that Braita. Ela gololo mitchilato lisofo. He rolls it from the beginning until the end. Based on that, the Girsa and the Braita makes sense. that on the Amud Berosho, the Amud at the beginning only has enough to go around the Amud itself. Then at the end, you have enough Kedei Lagul Amud. Then you have a full amount that goes around the outside of the Hekef perimeter of the entire wrap. So that's what Rashi is describing. And Rashi is of this belief that you roll from the beginning until the end. The Balei HaTosafot think that that's incorrect. And so therefore now they have to go and correct all the Girsaot or figure out how to read the Girsaot. And he says, V'kasha the Ri. He says the Ri had a difficulty with this explanation of the Rashi. The Tanya Masechet Sofrim. Kol HaSfarim Niglalim L'Techilatan. All Sfarim are rolled to the beginning, which would make a lot of sense. Like you were saying before, you want to open up a Sefer. You want to start it in the beginning. You don't want to start from the end. L'Kamana Mar Nami. Sefer Azara L'Techilato Hu Niglal. And the later part of the daf, today on Amud Bet, it's going to tell us that the Sefer Torah and the Azara was also wrapped all the way to the beginning. Even though there were two poles, nevertheless it was wrapped to the beginning. So now you're running into a problem. And Rashi says over here, Sheper Shekuntris mitzchilato l'sofo en alashon mashmakein. Rashi interpreted later on in the daf today when we say that the Sefer and the Azara was wrapped to the beginning, he says, v'niglal mitzchilato l'sofo. When it says litchilato miglau, it's wrapped to the beginning, Rashi means that it wrapped from the beginning to the end. Tosafot said that's a very hard reading, but Rashi is staying consistent that he always thinks you wrap from the beginning and then all the way to the end. Tosafot says it does not sound like that at all. In addition, also brings the Gemara Menachot with regards to a mezuzah, and there the Gemara is clear that when you wrap the mezuzah, you wrap it from Echad to Shema, that you wrap it from the, where the Echad would be to the Shema in that Pasuk, which means that you're wrapping from the end to the beginning. There it's very clear that Tchilato and Sofo, they give you the words, so you know which way you're going. That means from end to beginning. It says, Alkein nirah degri de garsinan voser brosho kedei hekef ubusofo kedei lagul amud. So the Ri flips the girsa in the Braita to say that the end amud has enough to go around the amud, and the beginning side has enough to go around the entirety of this Sefer, because they're doing just the opposite of what Rashi is doing. They're rolling from end to beginning. He says, L'Rashpa Nira, the Kayem Girsata Sfarim. He says that the Rashpa says that the Girsa that we have in this Braita is right. But over here, he makes a big distinction, and he says, V'Och HaShayni. Here it's different. Dari B'Mabik Torah Nevim Ektuvim. Here there's a whole Tanakh. It's different between a Sefer Torah and a whole Tanakh. By either any Sefer or a Sefer Torah, you would roll from the end to the beginning. So it's always open towards the beginning, unlike Rashi. But why did this Braita not have that? That's because you have a whole Tanakh. So now, what do you want to be on top when you have a Tanakh? What are you trying to protect when you have a Tanakh? The most precious thing is the Torah. So what would you want on the outside? You'd want the Nach to wrap around the Torah. The only way to do that is to roll from the beginning to the end so that the Nach is wrapping around the Torah. So he says, because of Kavod HaTorah in a Tanakh, we want you to wrap from the Torah side and then roll around it, the Nach and then the Ketuvim, so that which is the most precious or the most important is on the inside and the most protected. Because then otherwise the Torah is going to be wrapped around the Nevi'im Ketuvim, or it's basically becoming a cover to the Nevi'im Ketuvim. It's as if it's like a cover to them. So because of that, he says this bright is the exception. That when you normal roll, you'd have the amud at the end of the sefer, and then you'd roll to the beginning. In this Tanakh, we want the amud at the beginning of the sefer, because we want the Torah to be on the inside. So we're going to roll the Torah first, and then around it, you're going to have the Nevi'im and Ketuvim. So that's how he keeps the girsa intact, but still subscribes to Tosfot's position that normally when you roll so that it would open at the beginning. So that you roll from end to beginning. Unlike Rashi, who thinks consistently you're wrapping from the beginning to the end. Now, there are other views here that just say that when the bright over here says, Voseh b'rosho kedei lagul amud u'b'sofo, rosho and sofo are not the beginning of the Torah and the end of the Ketuvim, but rosho and sofo means the beginning of where you roll and the end of where you roll. I mean, that what is it referencing when it says beginning and end? We just assumed it meant the beginning means the Torah, and the end meant the end of the Ketuvim. But the truth is, you could just read it. It means from wherever you roll, that is the beginning. So that's at Rosho, you have Kedei Lagdul Amud. And at the end, you have enough to go around the whole perimeter of the Tanakh that you have there. So again, when you have one Amud, Zmachoket, which way you roll, Rashi says you roll from the beginning to the end. Whereas the Balei HaTosafot, and they bring proof from the Masechet Sofrim, as well as Mezuzah, you roll from the end to the beginning. How do you deal with our Braita over here? Either you change the Girsa, that's what the Ri did, or the Rashba suggested that maybe a Tanakh is different than any other Svarim, or you suggest that Rosho and Sofo don't mean the beginning of the Sefer and the end of the Sefer, but the beginning of where you roll and the end of where you roll. Right now, the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzavok, Kach hayu kotvei Svarim, Shebir Yerushalayim, Osim Sfeifreihem. That's the way the people in Yerushalayim used to put together their Sefarim, which is that they had two Amudim on the Sefer Torah, and then they rolled it to the middle, whereas the remainder of Sefarim, Niglalim, Mitchilatan Lesofan, from their beginning to their end, or, according to the Bali Tosfon and others, the Girsa should be, Sheniglalim, Misofan Letchilatan, that they did it from the end to the beginning. Right? Tarabanan, Eino Sim Sefer Torah, Lo Arko Yoter Al Hekefo, Lo Hekefo Yoter Al Arko. That the only way to make a proper Sefer Torah is to make it that the length, over here when they're speaking about length, they're speaking about the height of the Sefer Torah, that it should match the perimeter, meaning that the circumference of the Sefer Torah. Shalu et Rebbe, Shiur Sefer Torah Bekamo. What is the Shiur of a Sefer Torah? Amalhen, Begvil Shisha. When you're using Gvil, it's 6 Tvachim. Beklaf, when you're doing on a Klaf Bekamo, how much is it? Eni Yodea. He says, I don't know. So now, first of all, this is a very difficult feat to pull off, which is to get it so that you're matching the height of the klaf or whatever you're writing on is going to equal the circumference of the Torah once it's rolled up. So that's a pretty difficult feat to deal with because you have to figure out the thickness of the klaf, the size of the lettering and spacing, and based on that, you have to estimate from up front that you're going to be able to get that the height of the Torah is going to equal the circumference of the Torah rolled up. So first of all, what's the difference between a gvil and a klaf? The Bali HaTosafot already gave us a lesson in tanning of hides and how they used to make them. It's changed today in the Bali HaTosafot. It's already changed in the time of the Bali HaTosafot. The Bali HaTosafot over here say gvil, who or shall know nitkan klaf. It's a hide that was not prepared at all, except for the fact that they took off the hair. They took off the hair on the outside, then they are abed it, and they work it and they tan it at that point. So you get the full thickness of the hide, with just that little edge taken off, which is the side where the hair was, obviously, because otherwise you'd have the hair that was on that would be problematic. And after you remove the hair from it, that is the side that you write on. That's called gvil. And why do they call it gvil? Because it's not fixed or processed in any way. If you remember beginning of the Masechta, we said that gvil of Nei Delo Mishafyan. Gvil were the stones that were not hewn, were not cut into shape. They were the odd shape, say, raw or form. Upe amim. And so now the Tosafot describes a practice that came in later times, which is chotchim oto lishnayim derech obyo. That they started to cut the hides in half. In half, that means that, for instance, make it easier, when you have a piece of chicken or schnitzel, sometimes you don't want to keep it so thick, so you slice it across in order to make thinner pieces. So they did the same thing with the hides. Instead of keeping it as one thick piece, the hide, they used to slice down the middle and create two hides now, that every hide now would provide two possibilities of writing on it. And then he says, "V'oto sheklapea se'ar," the one that is closer to the hair, that's called klaf. "V'oto shetzad basar," and the one that is closer to the flesh of the animal, karoi duchsustus. That's called duchsustus. And he points out here that in Greek, duchsustus means the side with the flesh. And that's where the word comes from. And then he says, v'kotvin ala klaf litzara basar. The klaf you write towards the flesh side, and the duchsustus toward the se'ar side, or in essence, ubshneim emakom achatach. You write in the middle. Where you spliced it in the middle, that's where you're going to write. So the klaf, which is taking the outer piece, you write on the inner side. And the duchsustus, where you're taking the inner piece, you're going to write on the outer side, because that's where you spliced between them. Veshelanu. And this is the key element, because we don't do this anymore today. Today, we take the hide, and the single hide. That means it sounds like we only have gvil. That's what we're doing. We're writing on gvil. So why is it that we today can write on gvil? Because there are some issues in terms of what you can write on gvil. On klaf, you can write anything. Sefer Torah, mezuzot, tefillin. Based on that, what we do today, where we take a single hide and we cut off, shalano dim klaf leishlam, velo din duchstusus. Lekach kotvim aleim tefillin. Therefore, we write on them tefillim she'ein kshirim al duchstustus ela al klaf k'damar b'motziyayin. Why is that? Because the way that we process it today, instead of splicing it down the middle, what they end up doing is they take the skin, the hide, they cut off the side with the hair, and then they take the other side, and they also splice off a piece from the other side. So we're splicing both sides, meaning that instead of slicing through the middle and splitting the hide in half, we cut off the upper layer and the bottom layer, and therefore you're left with what's in the middle. And Tosfot calls that a klaf. So today, what they do is, instead of creating two separate pieces of duchstus and klaf, basically because we wear down both sides, we slice the top and the bottom off, we classify it as being klaf. And therefore, when we write on it, we classify it as klaf, so we can write tefillin or anything on it because of the way that we slice the layers up the top and the bottom. It's no longer considered to be what we're writing on. It's not considered to be duchstus, rather klaf, even though in essence we really have a gvil, because we're not splicing it through the middle. But by wearing down the top and the bottom, we simulate what would be a klaf. And therefore, everything we have today is considered to be klaf. So now, the Gemara continues, and you were all noting that it was very difficult to do this, to actually get this right. Rav Huna katav shiv'in sifrei doraita. He wrote 70 sifrei Torah, v'lo yisramile, elachad. Out of 70 shots of doing it, he only got one right. He was not successful at doing this, making it at the height equals the circumference of the Torah when it's wrapped around. It's not clear here, but I'm saying, I would speculate that it means the circumference including the Amud. And that also would have to factor in here, because otherwise, how would you test this if you don't have the Amud on? You're going to roll it without the Amud to figure it out. I'm assuming here that you have an Amud that you roll it on, and therefore the circumference incorporates the Amud in it. Rav Acha bar Yaakov katav chad ameshchei de'igle. He wrote it on the hide of a calf. Vitramule. On his first shot, he hit it. Hit the lottery, the jackpot on his first shot. Yavu be Rabbanan Einayu. The Rabbanan gave him basically an ayin hara. V'nach nafshen, he passed away. But Rabbeinu Gershom over here says, Kinu. They were jealous of him. Boshakach kivain. That in his first shot, he got it up. Everything lined up for him. And therefore, they looked at him or they gave him some sort of ayin hara because of that jealousy. And he passed away after just one shot and getting it right on the first time. Amarlei Rabbana and the Rav Amnuna, Katav Rabbi Ami Dalid Meya Sifrei Torah. At the Rabbana and Sifrei Amnuna, we heard that Rabbi Ami wrote 400 Sifrei Torah. As Rashi notes over here already, that a person doesn't have sufficient time in his lifetime to write 400 Sifrei Torah. So it's clearly Derech Guzma. Generally, the number 400, we pointed this out before, is used as a Derech Guzma, sometimes in the Torah itself, as well as here in the Gemara. These are numbers that are used as Derech Guzma. But they still want to give some explanation to the Guzma. When they said 400, how can we explain this 400, even though it's a Guzma? Amlo Dilma Torah Tzivalanu Moshe Katav. Maybe he wrote just the Pasuk of Torah Tzivalanu Moshe. The way that they're interpreting at the simplest level is that the word Torah appears in there. So when it says he wrote 400 Sifrei Torah, he wrote the words Torah Tzivalanu. The word Torah was there 400 times. The Baalei HaTosafot tried to give more meaning to that. The Rabbeinu Tam says over here, the Otu Pasuk Koroi Torah. That Pasuk itself is called the Torah because the Gemara informs us in Sukkah with regards to Chinuch that from the point that a child begins to speak, it's V'dibarta Bam. You should speak to him in Torah. The first thing you should teach a child when they begin to speak is the words of Torah. What does that mean? And the Gemara over there says you teach him the Pasuk, Torah Tzivalanu Moshe. So based on that, it would have the meaning also that the Pasuk itself has more meaning than simply Torah Tzivalanu Moshe. The Gemara names that or calls that Torah in a place when it says teach him Torah. What does it mean, teach him Torah? It means this one Pasuk. So this Pasuk represents Torah as a whole in other locations, and therefore that might be the meaning of it. Others suggest over here that he finished off 400 Sifrei Torah, or he wrote this Pasuk to finish off 400 Sifrei Torah, and in doing so he got credit for writing the Sifrei Torah. Or the way that he was a magia. He was someone who checked the Sifrei Torah. So he checked 400 Sifrei Torah and made the requisite corrections in them. That's what it means over here, that he fixed the pasuk of Torah Tzivalanu. He fixed something in the Torah, and therefore he's credited with the writing of the 400 Sifrei Torah, even though he didn't literally write all 400 Sifrei Torah. Amalei Rava Reb Zeira, Nota Rabbi Yanai Arba Meir Karme. It's a similar genre of claim that Rabbi Yanai planted 400 vineyards. So again, that's something that would just be beyond the human capability. It's just too many. Some relay, Dilma Shtaim Keneged Shtaim V'Achat Yotzei Zanav. He didn't plant full vineyards. He planted halachic vineyards. In order to be classified as a halachic vineyard, you need a 2x2 plus 1. You need 5 vines where they are squared out 2x2, and then there's one sticking out as a tail. That's considered to be a halachic kerem, a halachic vineyard, for the halachot in Sefer Dvarim, which allow you to come back from battle. When there's a battle and they send back certain people, one of them is someone who natak kerem. He planted a kerem, but has yet to bring up the revai to Yerushalayim. He's allowed to go back. What is a kerem for those purposes? That's exactly this. Shtaim keneged shtaim, v'achad yotzei zanav. So what he's suggesting here is that he began 400 vineyards by making this basic vineyard or planting 5 vines. The reason why he did it seems to be that he loved Eretz Yisrael and he wanted to plant or create settlement and fruits within Eretz Yisrael. So he went around starting vineyards all over the place, and then the other people picked up and finished the vineyards that he started. Right now, the Gemara is going to jump to discuss the issue of the Sefer Torah, which we just mentioned before about the structure of it being a certain height, and therefore the hekev, the circumference around it matching that height. Again, just if you look in the Halachot of the Rambam, who tries to mathematically calculate this and indicate what size letters you use and how to do it, you can see the complexity of having to do something or to plan out doing something like this, and very much it's contingent on the thickness of the cloth, which again is not an exact science because it's not always the exact same thickness that you have in the cloth. And all of those items contribute to this issue, and therefore it's very difficult to, as we saw here, to create a Sefer Torah with those dimensions. But Meitavei, Aron Shasa Moshe, the Aron made by Moshe and the Mishkan, we're coming up to the Parshiot of Mishkan soon, Amataim V'chetzi Arko, was 2.5 Amma in length, V'amma V'chetzi Rachbo, 1.5 Amma in width, V'amma V'chetzi Kalmato, and 1.5 Amma in height. V'amma Bat Shishat Fachim. The Amot that we're using here are Amot that are comprised of 6 Tvachim. There are 3 different Amot. There's an Amma made up of 5 Tvachim, an Amma made up of 6 Tvachim, and an Amma made up of 7 Tvachim. Again, all of these measurements are not exact measurements because an Amma deals with a person's arm. And a Tefach deals with a person's fist. So by definition, it's somewhat subjective because you're dealing with people with different size arms and different size fists. So for what one person fits 5 tefachim, for others fits 6, for others fits 7. And the same thing with the amah. The length of the amah will depend on the length of the arm of the individual. It seems that they came to some sort of standardization of these measurements, but the standardization involved 2 different types of amot, meaning that they standardized it on an amah that was 5 tefachim and an amah that was 6 tefachim. We know that from the Mishnayot and Midot, as well as the Gemarot in Kodoshim that describe the measurements in the building of the Mikdash, that the Amot of the Mikdash and the Amot of the Kelim were possibly different. And that's part of the Machloket that we're speaking about here. As Rashi notes over here, that Rabbi Meir is Litameh, is Lishitato, that all Amot in the Mikdash were Amot Benenuyot, the middle Amot. The middle Amot means the 6 Tefach Amot. Valuchot, the Luchot. Again, we're coming up to speak about Mamad Har Sinai. The Luchot that Moshe received are Kan Shisha, Rachban Shisha. They were actually square. They were each 2 square blocks of 6 by 6. The Ovyan and their thickness was 3. Shlosha Tfachim. Munachot Be'aron Keneged Arko Shel Aron. And they were laid at the base of the Aron along the length of the Aron. The truth is it doesn't really matter because they're square. But they lined them up along the length of the Aron. You think about the length of the Aron. The length of the Aron is 2.5 Amot. 2.5 Amot at 6 Tvachim is 6 plus 6 is 12 plus additional 3 is 15 Tvachim. So the length of the Aron is 15. The Luchot themselves are 6 and 6. Means they're taking up 12 of the 15 Tvachim. Kama Luchot Ochlot Be'aron. How much are they taking up? 12 Tvachim. 12 Tefach. Nishtaru sham shlosha tefachim. We have an excess of 3. Tzeimehem tefach. Take out a tefach. Chetzio dekotel zeh. Vechetzio dekotel zeh. The measurement of the aron is from the outside measurements, not the internal measurements, the external measurements. So in that case, you have to incorporate the thickness of the walls in this measurement. So he says, take a tefach of the remaining 3 tefachim, split it in half. Half of it will be one wall, half of it will be the other wall. So half tefach each in the walls. Nishtaru sham shnei tefachim. You have left over a space of 2 tefachim, shebehen sefer Torah munach. And there was the Sefer Torah that Moshe wrote, Shnemar, Ein Baron, in their own, there was nothing, Rak, Shnei Luchot Amanim, Asher Niach Shem Moshe. So Melachim Aleph, when it discusses Shlomo HaMelech, and bringing the Aron up to the Mikdash, and describing the Aron, it says the only thing found inside of the Aron were the Luchot Amanim, Asher Niach Shem Moshe, were the Luchot placed there by Moshe. Nice. Problem in the Pasuk, it says, Ein, and rak. So, if you would say, ein baron shnei luchot amanim, or rak baron yesh shnei luchot amanim, the fact that they use a double negative already makes it, two negatives make a positive. My ein baron rak, miut achar miut, that's a negative after a negative, ein miut achar miut, elo l'rabot. L'rabot, sefer Torah, shmunach baron, to tell you that not only were the luchot there, but there was something else inside their own. What was in there? The sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. So he says, Pirnasta Aron the Arko. Now he explained the length of the Aron. You have 15 tfachim, subtract 1 for the thickness of the walls, you're left with 14 tfachim. Out of those 14 tfachim, you have 12 for the Luchot, and 2 for the Sefer Torah. Say, Uparnes Aron Rachbo. Now explain to me the width of the Aron. Kama. Luchot Ochlot. Kama Luchot Ochlot Baron. How much do the Luchot take up in the width of the Aron? Shisha tfachim, 6 tefach. Nishtaru sham shlosha tfachim. Remember that the width of the Aron is 1.5 amot. 1.5 amot is 6 plus 3 is 9 tfachim. You have 9 tfachim. The luchot, remember, are 6 by 6. So they're taking up 6. You're left over with now 3 tfachim again. So those 3 tfachim that you left over, same in tefach. Leave over 1 tefach. Chetzio lekotel zeh, v'chetzio lekotel zeh. Again, for the thickness of the walls. Nishtaru sham shnei tfachim. They have 2 tefachim there, shelo yehi sefer Torah nichnas v'yotzeik shut achuk, so that you can able to take the sefer Torah out without any difficulty. Remember, based on what Rabbi said before, what was the height of a sefer Torah? He said the height of a sefer Torah in Gvil was 6 tefachim. That means that if you have a sefer Torah that is 6 tefachim high, then if the Aron itself was 6 tefachim wide, then the Torah would have to be squished in there, and there'd be no way to pull it out, to get your hands around it to pull it out. The only way to get your hands around it to pull it out is to leave space on both sides. So that's why you have 8 tefachim of width, even though the Sefer Torah itself is only taking up 6 tefachim. In addition, you could argue that the amudim stick out a little bit on either end, and that allows you to pick it up or take it out of the Aron. So that's why there's extra space in the width, even though it's not necessary for that which is contained within the Aron. And Baal HaTosafot are bothered by the fact that why do you need the Sefer Torah to go in and out of the Aron? The Aron is found in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and one is not allowed to enter into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, except the Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim. So when were they taking this Sefer Torah in and out? Nobody was going into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. He says, V'yesh lomar, d'lutzora kadei l'takein, shari l'kanes beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. Says that it is mutter to enter the Kodesh HaKodeshim for a reason. Just like the workers who used to fix the area inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim entered for a purpose. So to over here, you can enter for a purpose. Tosafot claims that the purpose is the Takena to Sefer Torah, which is here that they went in to fix the Sefer Torah, to make sure the Sefer Torah on their own wasn't rotting, was intact, and everything was fine with it. So they went in to check the Sefer Torah. It goes back to Boba Metzia a little bit, that when you find an Aveda, you have to shake it out every once in a while to make sure that it doesn't go bad or it doesn't get ruined. So same thing over here. In order to make sure that the Sefer Torah is right, they rolled it a little bit and they made sure that the Sefer Torah was okay. Or, he suggests here, in the interim stage. There was an interim stage between the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh till the building of the Beit HaMikdash, where the Aron sits either in people's houses or sits in the tent that David made. In that interim period between the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh till the Binyan HaBayit, then there's no Kodesh HaKodeshim. So then those instances, you have access to the Sefer Torah that's inside the Aron. That's what the Baal HaTosafot suggests. We'll see now on the Amud Bet, the Gemara is going to talk about the Sefer Torah Sheba Azara. And there Rashi notes that they used to read the Hakel. Every 7 years they used to read the Hakel from it, as well as the Kohen HaGadol and Yom HaKippurim read from that Sefer Torah. So there are Rishonim. I noted there, you have to look back at the Tosfot over here. Seems to me Tosfot disagrees with that. You have to say one of two things for the Baal HaTosafot. Either the Sefer Torah in the Aron was different than the Sefer Torah of the Azara. That's one possibility. Or if you think they're the same, then Tosfot disagrees with Rashi and says they didn't read from it on Yom Kippur and they didn't read it from it from Hakel. But it seems to be from Rashi and other Rishonim that they did use the Sefer Torah on rare occurrences, but they did need it, and therefore they needed space to take it in and out of the Aron. So that is the view of Rabbi Meir. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bamat Bat Chamishat Fachim. He argues with Rabbi Meir, and again, this is Rabbi Yehuda Lashitato, that says the Kelim were made from an Amad that consisted of five Tfachim. So based on that, now you just think about the dimensions of the Aron. The dimensions of the Aron are going to be 2.5 long. If you use five Tfachim, that's 10 plus 2.5 is 12.5 for its length. 1.5 wide, that's 5 plus 2.5 is 7.5 wide. So Valuchot, again, are Argan Shisha, Rachban Shisha. They are 6 by 6, Valbyan Shlosha, and they have a thickness of 3 Tvachim. Menuchot Barko Shel Aron. And they are put there along the length of the Aron. Kama Luchot Ochlot Baron. How much do Luchot take up in the Aron? 12 Tvachim. They take up 12 Tvachim. Nishtarusham Chatzi Tefach. What's left over is half a tefach. Remember, at 2.5 amot, at 5 tefachim, that gives you a 12.5. The luchot now are 6 each, that's 12. So 12.5 minus 12, you have a half tefach left over. What do you do with that extra half tefach? Etzba the kotel zeb, etzba the kotel zeb. That's the one etzba that makes up the thickness of the wall on either end of the aron. Pirnas aron arko. Okay, now you explain to us the length of the aron. Say uvernes aron rochbo. Explain to me the dimensions along the width of the aron as what's taking that up. Kama luchot ogdot ba'aron, or the way that the language until now in the Gemara was kama luchot ochlot ba'aron. How much do they eat up in the aron? Shisha tefachim. They are 6 tefachim. Nishtayer sham tefach umechta. Remember that 1.5 at 5 tefachim is 7.5. 7.5 minus 6 leaves you with 1.5 tefachim. Say man chatzi tefach. Take out a half tefach, which is going to be the thickness of the walls. Etzba lekotozev, etzba lekotozev. An etzba for each wall. That is not the girsa found in our Gemara. The girsa in our Gemara is etzba mechza lekotozev, etzba mechza lekotozev. You can see already in the Bach, in Otbet, he takes out the mechza. Because Rabbi Yehuda already just said the walls at the end were one etzba thick. So why all of a sudden the ones that are on the length side, which make up the two ends of the width, why would they be 1.5 instead of 1? Why wouldn't it be all the same thickness? You could argue, yes, that there is different thickness. You could argue it depends on how many etzbaot you think are in a tefach. That also could contribute to this. But to keep it simple, we'll just assume that it's etzba and an etzba here. Nishtayr sham tefach. Oh, now we have a tefach that's left over, according to Rabbi Yehuda, on either end of the rochav. But according to Rabbi Meir, that wasn't a problem. We did the same. We had 2 tefachim left over. But he left a tefach on each end so you could pull the Sefer Torah out. But Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have the Sefer Torah inside of the Aron. Since he has it inside the Aron, why do you need that extra tefach of space for the two ends? So Mar says, Shebo Amudim Omdim. That is where they put the, I would call them staffs or poles that they put in there. What poles are referring to? The Mar says, Shenemar, Apirion, Asalo Amelech Shomo, Matzei Alevanon. He made, now an apirion would be the equivalent of a chupa, or something like that. He made something that was on pillars of wood. Amudav asa kesef. The poles or the uprights were made out of silver. Refidato zahav. Their resting or their base was made out of gold. Merkavo, the curtain, was made out of argaman. So here are the different pieces. The Gemara, based on this, says that these poles of kesef were stored inside of the Aron. Now, the question is, what are they doing inside the Aron? The Gemara gives no explanation to that, as what they're doing inside of the Aron, as well as why they're made out of Kesef. Tosafot Rabbeinu speculates that they're made out of Kesef and not Zahav, because of the general problem of En Kategor and Ases Negor, which is that when you enter into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, we don't want anything made out of gold. That's why the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippurim doesn't enter with gold on him, because of the Egel, which was made out of Zahav, the Egel as Zahav. So because of that, they didn't want to use gold, despite the fact that the Aron was also made out of gold. But Tosafot differentiates between things that are Lechaper versus things that are just Kelim that function in the Mikdash. So he says that the Aron was a functional kli, that can be made out of gold. Something that's a chaper, whether it's the Kohen Gadol with his bigadim on Yom Kippurim, or these amudei kesef that are there, the chaper, they can't be made out of gold. But that means Tosfot already assumes that these amudei kesef are the chaper. What purpose do they serve in terms of kapara? So the Balei Tosfot explain over here, the amudim represent the fact, siman amadat Yisrael. There is siman to the strength, maybe even the longevity, or the uprightness of Klal Yisrael, and that the Amudim represent our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that we are forever belonging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that we are steady and steadfast in that manner. And that's what the Amudim represent according to the Balei HaTosafot. That's the first or possible explanation that we have in terms of what these Amudim were. Others suggest, and it would probably make a lot of sense, that the Amudim were there as braces to hold the Luchot in place. Because if you move the Aron and the Luchot had its gapping between them and the walls, they would move around while you're moving the Aron. So these basically took up that excess space and stopped them from moving around. Question is, what about Rabbi Meir Shita? Rabbi Meir Shita, we had more space and we didn't worry about it. But at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could explain that these were in there, the Amudei Kesef, to make up the space, the empty space there, so they would not move around inside the Aron. So now, according to Rabbi Meir, as the Rabbeinu Gershon points out, there was a tefach on each side. Over here, for Rabbi Yehuda, there was half a tefach on each side, and now the Gemara is suggesting that the Amudim go in there. So your question is a fair question with regards to the Mikdash. Once the Aron was put there, then the Aron is not moved anymore. There is some question as to what they did if there were two Aronot, how many Aronot there were. It's machloket in the Rishonim, a significant machloket in Mefarshei Tanakh, as well as in the Rishonim and Shas, as to how many Aronot that were made by Moshe Rabbeinu. Was there one Aron or two Aronot? And then what is the purpose of each one of those Aronot? But once they put it there, it wasn't going to move anymore. Yet, Rav Hirsch has a nice piece on the Aron, that despite the fact that the Aron was placed in the Mikdash in a permanent manner, it still had the poles on it for moving it, to carry it. So why would you have poles on it to carry it when it's going to be stationary? So he says that that speaks to the nature of Torah, which is that Torah is not something that is static, and it's not something that just belongs in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. It's something that permeates our entire lives, and it's something that continues along with us. So the idea that it still had the staves, Nevuv Luchot, the poles that were in there, the staves that were in there to carry it, was an indication of this idea that the Aron is still, quote-unquote, mobile, that it's still with us and it always goes with us. And so there you would say that it would be was ready to be moved, even though it never was moved, and that might explain the silver poles being there to brace it. So this is your question, Yechiel. V'argash sheshigru bo plishtin daron lelukei Yisrael munach mitzido. When the Mishkan is destroyed, the Plishtim take the Aron back with them after they destroy Mishkan Shiloh and they capture the area. They take into captivity the Aron. They have a little problem because the Aron doesn't want to be there with them, and they end up, people are dying and it's a terrible plague comes on them. So they figure out that the Aron, they need to send it back. So they set up this wagon and these animals to send it back, and they put in gifts in there, and then they kick it and they say, go. And wherever it goes, it should go. And they watch it. And it ends up in the city of Beit Shemesh. The people of Beit Shemesh don't necessarily treat their own with the proper respect. And it causes huge problems in the city of Beit Shemesh as well. Till it finally ends up in the person's private house, which later shows up, Shmuel Bet, when David HaMelech wants to bring their own up to Yerushalayim. He has to go to this individual's house to pick up the Aron, because he kept it there. And his house was blessed because of the Aron being there. Which is that it wasn't the problem that the Aron kills people automatically. It has to do with how you treat the Aron. The Aron is treated with respect. It brings bracha. And that household that housed the Aron all those years who treated it with respect had bracha in their house. Those that treated it in a disrespectful manner, it caused plagues and caused difficulty for them. So the pasuk says there, what did the Plishtim send along as gifts with the Aron? Bet kleazav asher heshevetim lo asham tasimu be'argaz. Those clay zav that you returned as an asham, as a, some sort of guilt offering towards the God of Israel, tasimu b'argaz mitzido, you put it into a casement on the side, v'shilachtam oto v'alach, you should send it off and it will go. So that case, or that casement on the side, is where the gift from the Plishtim remained even after it was returned. V'alav sefer Torah munach. On top of that, argaz is where the Sefer Torah was placed for Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have it in the Aron, he has it on the side of the Aron. So he has it in this casement that's on the side of, outside of the Aron, that the gift is in there, plus the Sefer Torah. Shneamar, l'koach et ha-Sefer HaTorah zeh, you'll take this Sefer Torah, it says Moshe, v'samtem oto mitzad Aron brit Hashem. You should put it on the tzad of the Aron. Mitzad haya munach, it was placed on the outside, v'lo b'tocho, not on the inside. So that's Rabbi Yehuda's proof. The obvious question is, that the Sefer Torah needed to be placed there before the Plishtim gave the gift. So that the Gemara will ask in 1 second. But what does he do with the pasuk that Rabbi Meir had? Ein ba'aron rak. So there you have a miotach, a miot, rabot. Rabbi Meir included the Sefer Torah. What does Rabbi Yehuda include? The rabot, shivrei luchot shemunachim ba'aron. To include that the shivrei luchot were actually inside the aron. The way Rashi describes it is that the shivrei luchot were underneath and the whole luchot were on top. So you have shivrei luchot at the bottom and the full luchot on the top. I'm talking about this in other contexts, but take a look at the mefarshim, that there are beautiful ideas of the shivrei luchot being found inside the aron and what that represents. The fact that even though they were broken, that they still had a place inside the aron. And again, there's nice meaning in the fact that the shivrei luchot are found inside of the aron. Just to note that this is shitat habavli. Shitat habavli is that the luchot were squares, 6 by 6, and therefore they took up all the space of the aron, and therefore you'd have to put the shivrei luchot underneath. Yerushalmi is of the belief that the luchot were 3 tefachim wide, 3 by 6. In that case, you could fit all of the luchot, both the whole luchot and the shivrei luchot next to each other across the aron. And that's how Yerushalmi deals with it. And in order to take up the entire 12 tefachim, they have both the regular luchot and the shivrei luchot next to them. But that's not shita rabavli. Shita rabavli is that the luchot themselves were square 6 by 6. The difference between them is actually very small. The question is, when you say they were 6 by 6 tefachim, did you mean that in totality, there are 6 by 6 tefachim? That means that each luach is 6 by 3? Or does it mean that each one of the luchot is 6 by 6? So that the Yerushalmi and the Bavli are interpreting that 6 by 6 differently. Yerushalmi is saying the totality of the two luchot is 6 by 6, and the Bavli is saying that 6 by 6 is each luach is 6 by 6. So it's not as far apart as you think. Okay, v'isagadatcha. So now, all of this to get to the question, which was that before we said that the way that a Sefer Torah works is that the height has to equal the circumference of the Sefer Torah. So this is what brings us to our question. If you believe that a Sefer Torah has a circumference of 6 tefachim, this is based on Rabbi's suggestion that they were using gvil, and on gvil you have a height of 6 tefachim, that means that the circumference would be 6 tefachim. And then how do you fit that into the aron according to Rabbi Meir? So let's understand this a little bit. First of all, how do you know that the Sefer Torah in the Azarah and the aron was written on gvil? It could have been written on something else and had a different width to it. The Gemara assumes that the reason Rabbi knew that gvil had 6 tefachim is because of the Mesorah. The only way that he would have known that, because it's such a difficult calculation, was that he had a Mesorah. Where was that Mesorah from? From the Sefer Torah that was found in the aron. So based on that, Tosfot backs into the fact that that's why it must have been on gvil and it was 6 tefachim. Michtei. Now we have to take out some of your mathematic skills here, your geometry. The Gemara assumes the concept of pi is equal to 3. We've seen this many times before in the Gemara. It's based on the psukim by Shlomo HaMelech, by the Yamshel Shlomo, that there it describes the circumference of the Yamshel Shlomo based on its diameter. And the relationship between diameter and circumference, we know the relationship is pi. The Gemara estimates that at 3. So here the Gemara says, Michtei, kol sheyesh be'kifo shloshat tefachim, anything that has a circumference of 3 tefachim, yesh bo rochav tefach, has a diameter of 1 tefach. So now if you tell me the circumference of the Sefer Torah is 6 tefachim, then, v'kevan del emtziyato niglal, if you're going to roll it to the middle, nafish le mitrei tefachon, it's going to be more than 2 tefachim. So if you assume that the circumference of the Sefer Torah is 6 tefachim, then if it was all rolled on one side at 6 tefachim, then you would have a diameter of 2 tefachim. And that is exactly the space that you have that's there. It would be very difficult to get the Sefer Torah in. But the Gemara points out, in addition to that, a Sefer Torah has a mudim on both sides, and you roll it towards the middle. If you think that the entire cloth wrapped around itself is 6 tefachim in circumference, when you roll it on 2 rollers, you're going to get a bigger circumference there. So it's clearly the diameter is bigger than 2 tefachim at that point in time. How did it fit in the 2 tefachim that were left in the aron? There's no space for it. Mar says, Rafka de Beni betray poshche hechiyotiv. How did that space in between, plus the Sefer Torah itself, fit into the space of 2 tefachim? So that's what it says here. It'll be more than 2 tefach, and Rafka de Beni plus the space in the middle from rolling it up, betray poshche into tefachim hechiyotiv. How does it sit in that space? It's too big for the space. Sefer Azarah litchilato hu niglal. So here, this is what the Baalei Tosfot brought up before. That the Sefer Torah in the Mikdash, in the Azarah, was rolled to the beginning. That's what it sounds like. It's rolled from the end to the beginning. Over here, Rashi does his acrobatics and says, niglal mitchilato l'sofa. That's what it really means. It's rolled from the beginning to the end. This is where the Balei Tosafot disagree with Rashi and say that's not right, that you roll to the beginning, not to the end. In addition, Rashi over here says that the Sefer Torah Zarah was the one that they read from on the Parshat HaMelech BaHakel, and that's where they also read from on Yom HaKippurim. Again, that might be against what Tosafot said before, that they never took out that Sefer Torah in the Aron, or you have to say the Sefer Zarah is different from the Sefer Torah that's found in the Aron. So that's one answer, is that it's rolled all the way to one side. Gemara says, Vakati trei betrei echayotif. Okay, you rolled it all the way to one side. What does that do for you? Now the circumference is 6, the diameter is 2. Diameter of 2 can't fit into a space of 2. Amar Rav Ashi, dekarech bei purta, vekarechei le'el. They wrapped a little bit of it onto the other amud, and then they rested it on top. So the majority of the Sefer Torah was all on one amud. They rolled a drop of it onto the other amud or on top, and then they gave it that extra space to fit in, and they rested that piece on top. So in essence, the Sefer Torah was not sitting flat on its back, rather on its side. Now the truth is, and the Ramban starts asking, well, if that's the case, why don't they just put the Sefer Torah on its side the whole way? You could wrap it to the middle and have it on its side. So that, and the Mishonim argue that, first of all, it's not Kavod HaTorah to lie it on its side. Number two is the same problem, moving the Aron again. It's lying on its side. When they move the Aron in the Midbar or afterwards, when they're traveling, it's going to fall over. It's going to topple over. It's not going to stay in place. If you put the majority of the roll down below and a little bit on top, it's not going to move because all the weight is sitting below and it's locked in place because of that, number one. And number two is, it's not really on its side because the majority of the Sefer Torah is sitting down below. You should remember back in the end of Bava Metzia where we dealt with the sugya of mezuzah, we said over there there's a machlok between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam as to how to put a mezuzah up on a doorpost. Rashi believes that a mezuzah should be standing up straight, and the Rabbeinu Tam believed that it should be laying down. Their arguments were based on way the Sefer Torah is put into the Aron. And Rashi says in our own oath, you always put the Sefer Torah in standing upright. And the Rabbeinu Tam says no, that you put the Sefer Torah laying down, flat, into the Aron. And so, that's where the argument stems from. This is one of the proofs of the Rabbeinu Tam, that the Sefer Torah was laying down. Because you see in the Aron, the way they put the Sefer Torah wasn't standing upright in the Sefer Torah. The Aron, it was lying flat in the Aron. And that's one of his proofs, that when you put a Sefer Torah in the Aron, you should be laying it down. Rav Yehuda, Mikame Delete Argaz Sefer Torah Eche Abiyotif. Wait a minute, until the Plishtim made this little casement on the side of the Aron, where did the Sefer Torah sit on the outside of the Aron? Dapahu de Nafak Mine, there was this protrusion or board that came out of the side of the Aron. Yotav Yilava Sefer Torah, and the Sefer Torah sat on it. Rabbi Meir, Hai Mitzad Aron Mayobile. What does he do with the Pasuk that says that they put Sefer Torah Mitzad Aron on the side of the Aron, which sounds like Rabbi Yehuda, that it was on the outside, not on the inside? Haumibayle de Monach Le Mitzad Velo Mitnach Bene Luche. Because you have a choice of where to place the Sefer Torah. Remember, it's along the length of the Aron. They have the two luchot, plus they have the Sefer Torah. So we said each one of the luchot takes up 6 tvachim, the Sefer Torah takes up the other 2 tvachim along the length. Now, you have a choice of where to place it. You could place it in between the two luchot, one luch on each side, and then in the middle you have the Sefer Torah. Or you can put the two luchot next to each other, and the Sefer Torah on the side. That's his answer. That's what it means, mitzad Aron. And the side of the Aron is telling you where to place the Sefer Torah in the Aron. Not outside the Aron, but on the edge or towards one side of the Aron, you should put the Sefer Torah. Ulalam begavei minatzad. But it still means inside the Aron, but on the side inside, not the outside. Rabbi Meir, amudim eicha bukaime. For Rabbi Meir, where were these amudei kesef? Where did they sit? Mibrai, on the outside. So he had these poles somewhere on the outside. It's not clear here how or where they placed them on the outside, but these silver poles were there. That brings up additional machlokot inside of the Rishonim as to whether these silver poles served to hold up the kaporet or the kruvim, somehow that they were used to strengthen the structure, which in the time of Shlomo Melech, the kruvim are much bigger on top, and maybe these amudim are used for that, and that's what it means, mibarai. Rabbi Meir, shivrei luchot menochim baron minolei. According to Rabbi Meir, how does he know that the Shibrei Luchot were found inside the Aron? Because Rabbi Yehuda learned it from the Pasuk that says that Rak and Ein, his double negative, told him that you include the Shibrei Luchot. But Rabbi Meir already used that to include the Sefer Torah in the Aron. So how does he get it from? Nafkelei Miravuna, Dama Ravuna, Ma'idichtiv, what is meant in the Pasuk? Asher Nikra, Shem Hashem Tzvakot, Yoshei Kruvim Alav. So in the Pasuk, in Shmuel Bet, when it speaks about the Aron, it says Hashem Yikra Shem, Shem Hashem Tzvakot Yoshev Kruvim Alav. Mlamed Shuluchot V'Shivrei Luchot Munachim Baron. That's to teach you that the Shivrei Luchot were inside of the Aron as well. And that's what Rashi says. Shem, Shem. It's written twice. Trezim Ne'ektive Luchot to the Shivrei Luchot. What does it mean, that Shem, Shem? What is, that's the name of God that is in there? It means that two sets of Luchot are inside of the Aron. Vidach. And we buy the Rabbi Yochanan. So what does Rabbi Yehuda do with that pasuk? He needs it for Rabbi Yochanan. Then Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Lamech Hashem v'chol kinuyav menuchim baron. That pasuk teaches you that the Shemot Hashem, all of the ineffable names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have, the 72 letters, or the 42 letters, all those different names of Hashem are included inside the Aron. They are also placed in the Aron. That's what it means, the Shem. Doesn't Rabbi Meir need it for that same limud? That the fact that the Shemot Hashem were found inside of the Aron? Ein Ochanami. That's right. Ela Shivrei Luchot Menachim Baron Min Olei. So then where does Rabbi Meir get the Shivrei Luchot that they're inside the Aron if he's using this pasuk for the Shemot Hashem that are in there? And the other pasuk teach you the Sefer Torah was in there. Nafkalei Meditani Rabbi Yosef. Turns it out from this bright, brought by Rabbi Yosef, the Tani Rabbi Yosef, Asher Shibarta, V'samtam, it says over there that you broke, that you will place. Mamei, Shaluchot, V'shivrei Luchot, Menuchim Baron. That the Shivrei Luchot and the Luchot were placed in the Aron. Rashi claims it's because the words Asher Shibarta are completely extraneous in the Pasuk. And why are they written there? In order to tell you that they were also in the Aron. Others just say it's the juxtaposition, it's Smichut. That Asher Shibarta and V'samtam next to each other, and therefore it's telling you that even though the pasuk doesn't parse that way, it's still, we connect the two, Asher Shibarta to the V'samtam, and therefore we know that they were in the Aron. So it says in Parshat Ekev, Moshe describing coming down after the Egel HaZahav and breaking the Luchot, it says, Beit Ahi Amar Hashem Elai, Psalucha, Shnei Luchot Avanim Karishonim, V'alai Elai Ahara, similar to what's written in Parshat Kitisa, V'asita Lecha Aron Eitz. And then make for yourself an Aron Eitz. This is where the Machloket Rishonim comes up as to whether this Aron is separate from the Aron HaMishkan or the same Aron HaMishkan. V'chtov al haluchot et dvarim asher ayu haluchot harishonim asher shibarta. You should write on the second luchot, that which was on the first luchot that you broke. V'samtam ba'aron, and then place them into the Aron. So again, the pasuk parses, there's an etnachta under the word asher shibarta. The asher shibarta is referencing or modifying the luchot harishonim from earlier on in the pasuk. And the samtam is clearly modifying the new luchot that you're going to write. So Rashi says Asher Shibarta was unnecessary. Of course the luchot Rishonim are the ones that you broke. That's why you're writing new ones. So the Asher Shibarta is extraneous, and that teaches you that they're also in the Aron. But others just simply say that the samtam is you shall place them. What is the them that's there? So they could, because of the juxtaposition of Asher Shibarta to samtam, they mean the samtam is referencing everything in the pasuk beforehand. Both the luchot that were whole, as well as the shivrei luchot. That's the way Rabbi Meir learns that the shivrei luchot are also found inside the Aron. Bidach, what does Rabbi Yehuda do with that pasuk in Dvarim? I will be violating the Reish Lakish, the Reish Lakish, Asher Shibarta. I'm a little Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe, Yi Asher Kochacha, Shibarta. Shkoyach, that you broke them. In that Moshe, based on the Gemara in Shabbat, and Daf Pezayin Pechet, discusses three things that Moshe did of his own volition. And afterwards, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's maskima yodo, that Hashem agreed to them. So there over there talks about the extra yaday that Moshe gave before they got the Torah. And then Hashem was maskim, because he only shows up to give the Torah on the day that Moshe said. Over here is another one of them, that Moshe broke the luchot. And then it says Asher Shibarta, and he sees that as being a eskama, or even that the word Asher is like Yi Asher. Means that you did the right thing in breaking the luchot. So Moshe did of his own volition, but Hashem gives approval to it afterwards. And the last thing, the third thing brought in the Gemara and Shabbat, is the fact that he separated from his wife. Hashem is maskim afterwards, that way he says everybody else should go back to their oel, to their wives, but you stay. Ata po amodi madi, you stay with me. So then there Hashem also agrees. So the three things were Moshe did on his own. And again, this is the stamp of approval from Hashem that what he did was correct. The Gemara now jumps to a totally new topic, connected because we're talking about Sifrei Torah, and we're talking about Tanakh. From here, it speaks about Sidran Shel Nevi'im. What is the order of the Nevi'im that is found in Navi? And when you have all the Nevi'im, what is the proper order in Tanakh of the Nevi'im? Yoshua, Vishuftim, Shmuel, Umelachim. That's pretty straightforward because that's chronological. So it's pretty easy to understand why that would be the order. This is because Yeshua comes first, then the Shoftim, then Shmuel, and then Melachim. They are all a continuous chronological history of what takes place from the time of entering into Eretz Yisrael until the Churban HaBayit. So that's why they're in that order. Just note here that Shmuel and Melachim are a single sefer. There is no such thing as Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet or Melachim Aleph and Melachim Bet. That is a much later introduction, and it's an introduction by other religions into our canon and splitting them up between Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet or Melachim Aleph and Melachim Bet. It's not the natural breakdown inside of those Nevi'im. And part of the proof is that really the stories are contiguous and that the stories just flow one into the other. There's no easy or clear break between the different Sfarim. Obviously, you can understand why they would break them over there between, David ascending to the throne. But it's clear that the stories are continuous and there is no break there. So then after that, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Yishayahu, Ushnei Masar. So those are the other books of Neimasar at the end. And then the order after Melachim is Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, and Yishayahu. Michdei. Wait a minute. Hosea Kadim. Hosea is early on. I mean, it's the first of the Nevi'im here. Dichtiv, because it says, Tchilat Dvar Hashem beHosea. The beginning of Hashem's word to Hosea. V'chi im Hosea diber tchila. Halo mi Moshe v'ad Hosea. Kam Nevi'im ayu. What do you mean? Is the first time Hashem spoke to anybody? Is the time of Hosea? So what does it mean? Tchilat Dvar Hashem beHosea. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shaya tchila la'arba'a Nevi'im sh'ninabu ba'oto perek. He's the first of four Nevi'im that are all giving Nevu'ah at the exact same time. Ve'elohein, who are these four overlapping Nevi'im? Hosea, Yishayahu, Amos, and Micha. So three of them are found in Treyasar, Hosea, Amos, and Micha, and there Hosea is the first of the Treyasar, so that's not the problem. The question of the Gemara is related to Yishayahu. Why is Yishayahu before Hosea? If we're looking at a chronological order over here, it would make sense to put Hosea first, and then Yishayahu after Hosea. So why is it that Hosea is after Yishayahu? And as Rashi notes over here, but it's clear if you go to the Nevuot of each of these Nevi'im, it describes over there that all of those Nevi'im gave Nevuah during the reigns of Uzziah, Yotam, Achaz, and Chizkiyahu, with the exception of Micha, who only has Nevuah during the time of Yotam, Achaz, and Chizkiyahu, is missing Uzziah. But they all are giving Nevuah, and the kings that they're mentioning in the time of their Nevuah are all overlapping. So what the Gemara says is Hosea was clearly earlier. So why is Hosea put at the end, and not earlier, not before Yishayahu? So the answer to the question is, Kevin Dichtiv Nevuatei, Gabe Chagai Zechariah Melachi. Since his Nevuah was written by Chagai Zechariah Melachi, Chagai Zechariah Melachi, Sof Nevi'im Abu. And they're the end of the Nevi'im, because we know that they have Nevuah already at the time of Bayit Sheni, in the building of Bayit Sheni. Forget about the end of Bayit Rishon. So they're definitely the last of the Nevi'im. So then, Abu Chashiv Lei Ba'adayu. So that's why they put it together. So the Gemara gives a strange answer, which says that you have Treyasar, and the Treyasar begins with Hosea and ends with Chagai Zechariah Melachi, who are the latest of the Nevi'im. Well, since Chagai Zechariah Melachi are at the end, so therefore we pulled it all the way to the end, and Hosea got pulled along with them. So that's a strange reason, because all you have to say is, who says that those 12 Nevi'im have to be together? Why is Treyasar Treyasar? Why are they all grouped together? So v'lichtav elu chudei. So just write Hosea separately. Don't put it as part of Treyasar. Pull it out. V'lekadmei. And then put it before, and then everything else with Chagai Zechariah Melachi will be at the end. But at least get Hosea before Yishayahu. So where it says, I did Zutar. Since it is very small, Mirkas, it would get lost. So it's an interesting idea. Now whether that means figuratively or literally, it's not clear. Does it mean literally, since it's a small sefer by itself, it would just get lost because there wasn't enough to the sefer to make it into its own sefer? So that's the point, that when you have small Nevi'im, like Avadja, which is only one perek, you have certain of the Nevi'im that are very small, and given that the fact that they're very small, in order to give them a certain amount of heft, so we put them all together, aggregate them to make a sefer that is a sefer of significance, so it doesn't get lost or ripped up or ruined. That's one way to say it, and that means literally, the physical properties of a small sefer are going to make it that it's not going to last, it's not going to work out. The other possibility is figuratively. If you put it between the other Nevi'im, if you put it in between Yechezkel and Yishayahu, then you're going to have it that they're going to wrap it up. It's going to get lost between the two Nevi'im. It's not going to have enough of its own standing. That's right. If you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom over here, it says, Mishani, came into Zutar Mirkas, Klomar, Bishom Dechol HaSfarim Nigdalei Mitchilatan. Since all the Sfarim are rolled from their beginning, If you wrote it by itself, when you roll it, it's just going to get rolled up inside the sefer itself. It's going to disappear from the eye. You're not going to have any of the sefer that's going to be visible. So you start rolling it, and it's just going to be around the amud itself. There's not going to be anything visible of the sefer, because the amud, the roll around the amud will take up the entire sefer. So you won't have anything sticking out at the end. And you're not going to know where it is. You're not going to find it. So here, he seems to be talking about it more from a practical standpoint. It's not visible inside of an avi. If you're rolling it up, it's just not going to be around. So you need more space. You need more heft to it. So you put it together with the trei asar. So that's what the Gemara answers. Now, given that, now we have an order, which is the chronological order until the end of Melachim. Then we had Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, and then Yishayahu, and then trei asar. To explain why trei asar is at the end, because of Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi, Hoshea is pulled along with them because they're all small sfarim or small nevuot, and they're aggregated together in the trei asar. So now the Gemara says, Michtei, Yishayahu kadim Yirmiyahu v'Yechezkel. Yishayahu comes before Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel, likadmei l'Yishayahu bereisho. Then Yishayahu should go before in the order of those nevi'im. We know that Yirmiyahu lives through the Churban HaBayit. He's giving nevuah about a Churban HaBayit, and he gives nevuah straight through the Churban and goes into Galut with Bnei Yisrael. We know that the Sara Tabachim is at the time, we just read this last week in the Gemara, based on the Pasuk, that he freed him, or he took the chains off of Yirmiyahu, and he sets him free and says, your nevuah came true. Bnei Yisrael are punished because they didn't listen to Hashem. In addition, we know that Yirmiyahu goes down to Mitzrayim and gives nevuah in Mitzrayim and speaks to the people who want to go to Mitzrayim. So we know that Yirmiyahu is alive at the time of the Churban, and Yechezkel also. In Sefer Yechezkel, it speaks about the palit who escapes from Yerushalayim and comes to Yechezkel in Chutz Taretz and tells him about the fact that the Churban happened, which he'd been predicting all along. Then afterwards, he launches into his Nechama after they get the news of the Churban HaBayit. So both of them live through the Churban HaBayit. Yishayahu is assassinated by the king Menashe. So therefore, he doesn't live through the Churban HaBayit. Based on that, Yishayahu precedes Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu. So why is Yishayahu at the end instead of at the beginning of these three Nevi'im over here? So Gemara says, Kevan de Melachim Sofei Churbana. The end of Sefer Melachim describes the destruction of Yerushalayim. I mean, it's the conquest of Yerushalayim. It's Melech Bavel coming and destroying the Beit HaMikdash. Yirmiyahu Kulei Churbana. And Yirmiyahu is a very sad, morose type of Sefer. And therefore, Yirmiyahu is appropriate to be adjacent to the end of Sefer Melachim. The truth is that his nevuot relate to that period of time as well, but still, it's connected thematically to the end of Sefer Melachim, and therefore, it's apropos to be there. Now, the truth is that even in Yirmiyahu, we have nevuot of Nechama. We happen to read them, Rosh Hashanah. We read the Haftarot that come out of Yirmiyahu. So there are Nechamot, or nevuot of Nechamot, but the majority, or the overwhelming majority of the nevuot of Yirmiyahu are sad and terrible nevuot. Yirmiyahu was also, we're seeing it second, the author of Kinot, of Eicha. In that Yirmiyahu was very involved in the sadness and the destruction associated with the Churban HaBayit. Therefore, thematically, it makes sense that he's after a Sefer Melachim. Yechezkel, Reishei Churbana, B'Seifa Nechamta. And Yechezkel, as I described before, in the beginning, it's all predicting the fact that they're going to get news in Bavel of the Churban HaBayit. And then Vayavo HaPalit, the person who escaped from Yerushalayim comes and gives them the news that's many months after the Churban HaBayit. By the time he gets to them and tells them about it, they only find out about it way after the time period when it was destroyed. But that launches Yechezkel's change in Nevuah to Nevuot of Nechama after that point in time. But it begins with Churban, and therefore ends with Nechamta. Bishayah Kulei Nechamta. Yishayahu was all about Nechama, is all positive and futuristic Nevuot. Again, the truth is that that's not the case, because we read on Shabbat Chazon, the first parak of Yishayahu, which is about Churban, or what's going wrong in Yerushalayim. But again, the overwhelming Nevuot of Yishayahu are Nechama, and they are the source for the Shiva and Nechemta, all come out of Yishayahu. So that overwhelming thematically, what they tried to do was keep a theme that continued. Melachim ends with Churban, so they go with Yirmiyahu, which is overwhelmingly Churban. They go to Yechezkel, which is half Churban, half Nechama, and they move to Yishayahu, which is complete Nechama. So again, it's a thematic continuum, which we want to move from Churban to Nechama, and therefore we move from Yirmiyahu to Yechezkel, and then to Yishayahu, which ends up from going from Churban until Nechama. Despite the fact that Yishayahu lived earlier and should have been before Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel. So now the Gemara says, Sidran Shel Ktuvim. So we just dealt with the Nevi'im. Now what's the order of the Ktuvim? Rut goes first for obvious reasons. It says, Vayhi Bimei Shvota Shoftim. That's the time of the Shoftim. That's the earliest of the Ktuvim. The Sefer Tehillim, because that's David HaMelech. Afterwards, Iyov, which I'll have to deal with in a second. Mishlei Kohelet V'Shir HaShirim, that is all Shlomo HaMelech. V'Kinot, after that you have Eicha, which is written by Yirmiyahu, at the time of Yirmiyahu. Then you have Daniel, who's at the time of the Galut and Bavel. Umigilat Esther, which according to the Gemara here is also in the time of the Galut, but later in the Galut. Then Ezra, which again, in the original Tanakh, there was no Ezra and Nehemiah. Ezra and Nehemiah were a single book called Ezra. Even Rashi, a number of times, when he's referencing a pasuk in Nehemiah, says, B'Sefer Ezra, because that it's found in Sefer Ezra. It wasn't split into two Sfarim. So now you have Ezra, because he's the Navi at the time of the building of the second Beit HaMikdash. And then Divrei HaYamim, which is very late. Divrei HaYamim is written in the middle of Bayit Sheni. So that would be, again, chronologically, the way that they ordered them out. Gemara says, U'lamandam har Iyov b'mei Moshaya, who is Iyov? When did Iyov take place? So there is a daya that Iyov was at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. L'kadmei l'Iyov b'reisha. You should put Iyov in the beginning. Tosfot says that the question's a little bit interesting because we're going to see in a second that the continuation of this braita clearly says that Iyov was in the time of Moshe, because Moshe wrote Iyov. So he says, why are they saying the Mandamar? It's clear that that's what he thinks. But the Gemara posits it in that manner, even though the Braita is going to continue and tell us this information that it was Bimei Moshe. Nevertheless, Tosfos says they didn't know the end of the Braita. So they're just interceding in the explanation of the Braita before they knew the remainder of the Braita. So then, Atchulei Bivuranta lo matchilinan. We don't want to start on a bad note. Iyov is a somber, again, morose type of sefer, and therefore we don't want to start out Ktuvim on such a bad note. Remember that when it comes to learning Torah on Tisha B'Av, it's asur to learn from the Torah except from places in the Torah that are sad. And the examples that are brought by the Gemara are the Nevuot of Yirmiyahu and Sefer Iyov and other locations about sad issues of the Churban inside of Sefer Melachim and other areas. But you see here that Iyov and Yirmiyahu are termed as Sfarim of Purunata, or negativity. So Rut, Nami Purunati. Wait a minute, Rut is also not such a favorable story or a nice story. Over there you have Elimelech and his two children dying, and then all the problems with coming back, and the famine, and so on and so forth. It's really not a happy story as well. Gemara says, yes, Purunati Le'acharit. Yes, it starts out on a sad note, but it ends on a happy ending. And that's why Ruth can be first. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lama nikra shma Ruth? Why is her name Ruth? She yatsa mimena David. Because David came from her, a descendant of Ruth is David HaMelech. She revolved HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'shirot v'tishpachot, who satiated or serenaded HaKadosh Baruch Hu with song and praise. So therefore, the end of the story is a nice ending, because Ruth herself represents this idea of all the songs and Shvachot that came from David HaMelech. She is the progenitor of that line of David HaMelech. And that, according to the Baalei Tosafot, explains why Tehillim comes immediately after Rut. Because the way that we're saying it now, it should have been Rut, then Iyov, then Tehillim, because Iyov was earlier. The reason we didn't put it first is because we want something nice to start with, so start with Rut. Well, if you're going to do that, why not put Iyov between Rut and Tehillim? The answer is because Rut connects directly into Tehillim, because that's David HaMelech. So therefore, they made the order Rut, Tehillim, and then Iyov. And then they moved on to Shlomo HaMelech, and then to the keynote, and so on, following this chronological order. Tosfot asks the opposite question now. What about the other daya? There's another mandamar in the Gemara that says Iyov was at the time of the Gola, or a much later period. If you believe that Iyov really lived at a much later date, then why is Iyov found immediately after Tehillim? It should be much later in the Ktuvim. It says, Vomari, why is Iyov found by Tehillim and Mishlei? It's a similar genre of psukim. Tuvim ein shira. It's written like a shira. Mikraot k'tzarim. They have a very short psukim. V'nigun echad. And they're the same chant to them. They're the same trup to the ktuvim that were found for Tehillim, Mishlei, and Iyov. Given that, there's a commonality between them, independent of the authorship, there's a commonality between the style of Tehillim, Mishlei, and Iyov. And given that, they believe that even if Iyov was written later, it should be paired together with Tehillim and Mishlei. Before we move on, the fact that our ktuvim today are in a different order is the influence, again, of other religions. The ktuvim, the Gemara here lays out an order that we do not have. The way that our ktuvim are laid out, that we first have Tehillim, then Mishlei, then Iyov. So the order of ours has nothing to do with what the Gemara is saying over here, but rather it was influenced by other religions, and therefore our ktuvim, or the way that our Tanakhs are put together, involved the influence of other religions on the way that they parsed this Sfarim, and that leads also to Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Bet, Melachim Aleph, Melachim Bet, and the, as well as the Prakim and Psukim that are found in our Sfarim are not a Jewish innovation. They were put in by Langton in England, who was not very fond of the Jews. He, in the end, was the one who split up the Prakim and Psukim that we use today. And the irony of the whole thing is that this person, who was very anti-Semitic, in the end, influenced very heavily how we look at the Prakim and Psukim inside of our Sfarim. We use his enumeration, even though the Torah itself has the Parshiot, Ptuchot, and Stumot that creates Prakim and then could create Psukim based on that. Nevertheless, we follow that protocol so that everybody's on the same page. And that means literally, when they had the debates in the Middle Ages, and like the Ramban and others, in order to be able to quote chapter and verse, you have to be on the same chapter and verse. And since the Jews never had this idea of chapter and verse, in terms of Psukim and Prakim, they ended up adopting the Prakim and Psukim that were already in place by the other religions, and therefore we adopted the other religions in terms of both the Prakim Psukim as well as the order of the Sfarim. Now I'm going to ask, Umi Katvan, who wrote the Sifrei Tanakh? Moshe Katav Sifro. Moshe wrote his own Sefer, meaning the Sefer HaTorah. Upashat Bilam, as well as Pashat Bilam, because why does Moshe and Rabbeinu know anything about what the Nevuot of Bilam were? The Nevuot of Bilam are a narrative told in the Torah from an outsider who knows what happened with Bilam, but not someone who was inside, meaning that Bnei Yisrael have no idea what's going on with Bilam. It's only that Hashem informs them afterwards that says, I saved you from Bilam, but that's only because it was written. Had it not been written, Bnei Yisrael would have no idea what had transpired with Bilam. So that's what the Gemara says here, that the Parshiot of Bilam are written by Moshe through Ruach HaKodesh or through some instruction from Hashem, taking the Nevuot of Bilam and placing them into the Sefer Torah. That does lead to different ideas about the Kedusha as well as the nature of Parshiot Bilam within the Sefer Torah. And the Briskers have some Torah about that, about what exactly is the status of Parshiot Bilam inside of a Sefer Torah, because you can see here that they Gemara segregates them and enumerates them separately. And Iyov, that's what I mentioned before, that this Braita clearly believes that Iyov was written by Moshe because it happened in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yoshua Katav Sifro. Yoshua wrote his own Sefer, Sefer Yoshua. Ushmuna Psukim Shebetorah. And the last 8 Psukim in the Torah, that we'll get to in tomorrow's daf, that is a machloket as to what happened at the last 8 Psukim in the Torah. Because the last 8 Psukim in the Torah say by Yamat Moshe. Moshe died. So how is it possible that Moshe is writing if he's already dead? So you have to deal with that. That's a machloket about it. Here the Braita clearly takes a position that the last 8 Psukim were written by Yoshua and not by Moshe Rabbeinu. Shmuel Katav Sifro v'Shoftim v'Rut. Shmuel wrote his Sefer, as well as all the stories of the Shoftim beforehand, because in many senses, the Navi Shoftim is a justification for bringing order to Bnei Israel through the Navi and through the Melech in Sefer Shmuel, because of the refrain that appears often in Sefer Shoftim. Everybody did what they wanted. There was no rule of law. There was no guiding principles that were there or guiding people. Virut, because it was Vayi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, is the time Shoftim, Shmuel wrote it. David Katav Sefer Tfilim Ayadei Asara Zekenim. David wrote Sefer Tfilim along with the help of the 10 Zekenim. But that means that the 10 Zekenim made up those songs and David just collated them? Or does it mean that David Beruach HaKodesh knew about these other songs that were formulated by others? Ayadei, who are they? Adam HaRishon. Rashi over here quotes the Perek in Tehillim, which refers to something about the creation of man in Kuflam Betet from Gomei Ra'u Einecha, which is a reference to the creation in the beginning. Whereas if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he quotes that it was Aidei Adam Rishon because of Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, which Chazal, the Midrash, claims was said by Adam Rishon. Aidei Malki Tzedek, in Perek Kuf Yud, the Pasuk says, Al Divriti Malki Tzedek. So Malki Tzedek is mentioned there explicitly. So Aidei Abraham, Aidei Moshe, Aidei Heman, Aidei Yedutun, Aidei Asaf, Aidei Shlosha B'nei Korach. So all of these are Tehillim that you're familiar with. Lemnatzeach libnei Korach. Those are the sons of Korach. We also have Lemnatzeach libnitun, Maskil Haman, and Tefillah le Moshe. And Rashi notes that many of the Rishonim believe that not only is Tefillah le Moshe, but the subsequent 10 Mizmorim are also attributed to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Avram Avinu is based on the Shita that Eitan HaMizrahi, who's mentioned in Tehillim, is Abraham. And so based on the fact that Abraham is Eitan HaMizrahi, he would also be one of the authors of Tehillim. All of those individuals who are mentioned in particular in terms of their authorship of those Tehillim. And that's what's mentioned over here in terms of the list of the 10 Zkenim that David HaMelech, either again, he aggregated all of their songs along with his own, or he had Beruach HaKodesh, these songs that they were formulated earlier, he had access to them, and he put them together in Sefer Tehillim. Tosfot over here knows that there was an alternate girsa that it was not Shlosha b'nei Korach, but rather Ayidei Shlomo u'b'nei Korach, because there are Mizmorei Tehillim that are assigned to Shlomo HaMelech as well. Tosfot tries to deal with the different girsa oath as to who the 10 people are, whether Shlomo is included, or Shlomo subsumed under David HaMelech, as well as the fact that they were girsot that had Abraham and Eitan HaMizrahi separately enumerated here, which would mean that Eitan HaMizrahi really is referencing Yaakov and not Abraham. So Tosfot tries to reconcile and work out who the actual authors are. And again, there are different girsot in the Braita. You can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom that he says that the 10 that are here are excluding Adam HaRishon. I mean that besides Adam HaRishon, there are 10, which seems to imply that he had the girsot that Tosfot had, which was it was Shlomo b'nei Korach. That means that there are 11 people enumerated here, not 10. And that's why he says it's 10 besides Adam HaRishon. Yirmiyahu katav sifro. Yirmiyahu wrote his own sefer, as well as Sefer Melachim, because again, he lives through the Churban. It makes sense that he would write Sefer Melachim. Vikinot and Eicha. Eicha is also written by Yirmiyahu. Chizkiyahu v'siyato katavo. Chizkiyahu and his helpers. The Rebbe Gershom says his Talmidim. So Chizkiyahu was given credit for this, even though he did not write all of them. It was a group effort, or maybe even a continuing effort, even after Chizkiyahu, was because we know, the Gemara tells us that Chizkiyahu brought back learning to Klal Yisrael, that he did a tremendous effort to bring back Limud Torah during his time to Klal Yisrael, and therefore he's credited with the writing of these Sfarim. What did he write? Yishayahu, Mishlei, Shir HaShirim, VeKohelet. So now, in terms of why these Sfarim are written by Chizkiyahu and his Sia, Yishayahu, Tosfot notes over here, why didn't Yishayahu write his own Sefer? It's because Yishayahu is assassinated by Menashe. So Nevi'im, and that's what Tosfot says, normally wrote their Sefer at the end of their life. So they waited towards the end of their life, and then they wrote down the Nevuot, or whatever Sfarim they were going to write. Yishayahu, who never made it to the end of his life because he is killed, therefore, he doesn't have time, in a sense, to write his own Sefer, or even to write Sefer Melachim. And that's why he doesn't write Yishayahu, as well as the fact that he doesn't write Sefer Melachim, and that's why Yirmiyahu has to write Sefer Melachim. In terms of Chizkiyahu, he wrote, again, Yishayahu, that Mishlei Kohelet, because it's written in Sefer Mishlei, Ashehi Tiku Anshei Chizkiyah. The Pasuk explicitly says that the Anshei Chizkiyah put it together. So we know that Chizkiyahu was involved in the writing of Mishlei. As far as Shir HaShirim and Kohelet are concerned, right over there, it's not clear how we know that Chizkiyahu was the one that wrote them. But the assumption being that if he wrote Mishlei, that was authored by Shlomo HaMelech, that he also put together Shir HaShirim and Kohelet, which were all authored by Shlomo HaMelech. Anshei Knesset HaGdolo HaKatvu, Yechezkel, Ushnei Masar, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolo put together Yechezkel and Shnei Masar, Daniel, Umigilat Esther. So they put together all of that history, which the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah in the time, early time of Bayit Sheni, and therefore they put together all of these items. Rashi over here tries to explain why Yechezkel didn't write his own Sefer. If Yishayahu didn't write it, we understand, because he was killed before he could write it. But Yechezkel, we have no evidence of the fact that he was killed, and why didn't he write his own Sefer? So Rashi speculates over here, because his Nebuah was in Bavel, in the Gola, And actually, there was a Misora from the Iraqi Jews in Baghdad, where they were the Shomrei Kivrei HaNevi'im, that they guarded the kever of the Navi Yechezkel, and that Yechezkel was actually buried in Baghdad in Iraq, where the community in Bavel was. And so it says, Mishnei Shlo Nitna Nevuah Likatei B'chutz La'aretz. Rashi says that because Nevuah was not written down in Chutz La'aretz, because Vum Eilu La'achar Shebao La'aretz, never only those people who came back to Eretz Yisrael after the fact wrote down those items. V'chein Sefer Daniel Shaya B'gola. That also explains why Daniel didn't write his Sefer, because he was also in the Gola. V'chein Megillat Esther, and all the story of Megillat Esther is only written later by the Anshei Knesset Agadola. Ushneimasar, why weren't the Shneimasar written down by each Navi after he had finished? Because again, there they were in Eretz Yisrael, and it's a much earlier time. Since they were smaller Nivuot, they didn't each one write their own Nivuah, but rather they waited later on when the Anshei Knesset Agadola aggregated all the Nivuot and made it into a single Sefer. And that's because the end of the Shneimasar is Chagai Zechariah Melachi, who are the beginning or the Nevuot about Bayit Sheni. And they realized, Rashi says, that Ruach HaKodesh was leaving Klal Yisrael. And so they took the initiative to write down all that was coming before them, as well as to ensure that the Anshei Knesset Gedola were put in place in order to bring the canon and include these Sfarim in the canon of Tanakh. On the other hand, the Baal HaTosafot say that they don't think that Rashi's explanation about Yechezkel is correct, because he says that after Yirmiyahu HaNavi is taken out of Yerushalayim, he ends up living out his life in Mitzrayim. And that means that if Yirmiyahu wrote the Sfarim at the end of his life, then he was writing in Chutz La'aretz. So then that would not be the right explanation for why Yechezkel didn't write his own Sefer. And then you'd have to come up with a different reason or an alternative as to why Yechezkel didn't write his own Sefer. Ezra Katav Sifro, Ezra wrote his own Sefer, V'yichus Shel Divrei Yamim Adlo. And in Divrei Yamim, he wrote the Yichus until his own Yichus, meaning until the time of Ezra, he wrote Divrei Yamim. Misayile L'Rav, Damar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, that helps Rav's position. The Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Rav. Lola Ezra mi Bavel, actually Yichas Etzmao Vala. Ezra didn't leave Bavel until he enumerated his Yichus and then went up. That would be the reason why Ezra wrote Divrei Yamim up to that point in time, is to show what his Yichus was and to show where he had descended from. Tosfot over here brings an alternate girsa that was found in the Gemara, was not ad lo, until his own Yichus, but rather ad vilo, until a pasuk in Divrei Yamim, bet, perichav aleph, pasuk bet, that says, velo achim b'nei Yoshafat Azariah. And they claim that Azariah is Ezra. The problem with that is that Ezra is a Kohen, and therefore it makes no sense that he is enumerated in the Yichus of Yoshafat, of B'nai David, of the Davidic line, and therefore Tosfot rejects this Girsa and says the Girsa should be low and not Vilo, or he says the fact that the Girsa is low, says that that explanation of the Rabbeinu Chananel is very precarious. Uman Aske, who finished Divrei Yamim, if Ezra didn't finish it? Nehemiah ben Chachilaya. It was finished by Nehemiah, who is a contemporary of Ezra, who worked together in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, both in the building of Bayit Sheni as well as getting the people back on track in Bayit Sheni. Although there are those that argue that it was written even later, meaning that Ezra Nehemiah, who established the Anshei Knesset Agdola, they precipitate that and then they cause the writing of it or the finishing of it later on in the time of Bayit Sheni. Okay, we're going to stop here. 9 lines down on the top of Tedvav Amud Aleph.